Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there!
That was very musical of you, Jonathan.
Thank you. We're going to talk about musical hacks today.
Oh, yes.
So, again, we're in our series of episodes about using technology to do stuff what it was not meant to do.
What it was not meant to do.
Or to manipulate it, change it, tweak it in some way so that it behaves in a new and exciting way.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to talk about that sort of culture that and the music culture and how those two overlap.
Okay.
Because it turns out that a lot of people who have liked to hack physical as well as virtual types of stuff are also really into the music.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, a lot of the we've kind of touched on this in the past.
We
recorded an episode in early 2011 about chiptunes.
Yes, chiptunes being music that you generate from those old 8-bit machines and earlier. But things like the Commodore 64 and stuff, you take the chips that were able to generate tones and you repurpose them so that you program new sorts of music that those devices were never necessarily meant to produce back in the day, but it does produce that very, very distinctive sound that we associate with the early days of computing and video games.
Yep, yep. Wasn't that the episode where I embarrassed myself because I'd prepped by listening to bags of potato chips?
You can't listen to just one.
It's true.
Yeah.
I did learn that much. But no, a lot of the people... we didn't really get into the technology behind that as much because, I mean, we did talk about how they use video games in that case as electronic instruments, but we didn't really talk as much about building, about what you need to do to make that happen.
Mm.
One of the people that Jonathan sort of, if you'll pardon the pun, tuned me into hacked an Atari 2600.
Yes, he made the Gatari 2600.
Yes.
C-Trix.
Yeah, he's an Australian fellow.
Yeah, he's a chiptune artist from Australia, and he took an Atari 2600, He took some various electronics meant to manipulate the waveform of a sound once it's been produced.
Mm-hmm.
And then he created some customized software to be able to create music using this Atari 2600. And it's not creating music completely improvisationally. There's some stuff that has to be pre-recorded and, you know, predetermined, because he could not actually just produce any tone he wanted at any time he wanted.
Right. Now, he knows how the these initial machines, and we've talked about this, too, on a previous episode in which we were talking about the gaming hardware.
Yeah.
Those early machines, like the Atari 2600, had a library of sounds built into the machine. It was on a chip.
Hardwired.
Hardwired into the chip. So Ctrix is familiar with the hardware. He knows what sounds are available to him on this machine.
Right, the range of tones and volumes, etc. Yeah.
And different waveforms, the square wave, and the different sounds that he can make. And so what he does is he uses a computer to write a background track, basically using assembly code,
right,
which is a very low-level programming language. And he's able to use, he knows what the sounds are, and he writes the software, and then he ends up burning a ROM to go into the cartridge slot on the Atari.
So it's just like you were putting a video game. So, like, let's say you wanted to play Pitfall, and you put that into the Atari 2600. Mm-hmm. By the way, Pitfall was an awesome game.
Yes, it was.
It was a River Raid, another awesome game. But you put that into your Atari 2600, you turn it on, and then it goes. Well, in this case, he was creating the equivalent of a music cartridge that you put in there. And what would happen is it would play this predetermined track, which he could then manipulate with the other electronics that he had built. And he built it on a platform that resembles this huge clunky guitar.
Right. Now, if you're familiar with something like GarageBand or some of these other basic music editing software programs, you're probably familiar with the idea of them saying, okay, well, we've included 100 clips, and it'll be something really simple, a basic percussion track, or maybe a bass line that you can use as a bass line to write a piece of music over. And so that's what he's including there. He'll write a basic, if you will, something to build on, and he'll turn on the Atari machine, and it starts playing that bass track on which he can improvise playing additional notes.
Right.
He uses, there's a joystick attached to this.
Yes.
It looks very much like the third party joysticks that you used. Actually, it may very well be. I don't recognize that particular joystick, but it's got a couple buttons on it. And he can use that to switch between tracks on the cartridge.
Yep.
And it's also got some effects pedals. He actually used, I switched my notes here. He has an equalizer pedal.
Yep.
Built in. And these are the stomp pedals, the foot pedals that a guitarist would use, but you see them switch on the floor.
Right. So instead of stomping on it, he's actually built these into the neck of the
Atari
2600. So he's using his hand to change the pedals as opposed to his foot.
Yeah, there are three. There's an equalizer pedal or EQ. There's a flanger and a digital delay pedal, which he uses with his hands. In addition to having the joystick and the Atari 2600, which is at the, where you would find the body of the guitar.
Right. So, I say we listen to a short segment of Ctrix playing his Atari 2600. This is him playing at a live performance in Japan. And we're just going to give you a short little snippet to kind of let you understand what it sounds like. If your ears are sensitive, I recommend lowering the volume of your listening device now. I'm vamping a little bit so that you can do this because it is pretty loud. But here is an example of his live performance in front of a crowd in Japan.
It's definitely, some of the comments on his YouTube page are a little harsh. I agree that that's not necessarily everybody's style of music, but I do think that it's very, very cool what he's done there.
It's kind of a mix between electronica and industrial.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
yeah,
it's,
it really is.
It's got a real crunchy kind of sound to it. There are other approaches to this musical hacking that are similar to that. There's a great term called circuit bending,
mm-hmm.
which really seems to be prevalent in the UK more than in the United States. But it's the idea of using low-voltage musical electronics that you would find in things ranging from basic video games to even electronics that you would find like in a children's toy.
Yes.
Like Speak and Spell.
Yeah.
And and then you bend. Circuit bending means you are actually short-circuiting the device and you're producing new sounds that the device was never meant to create.
Yeah, a lot of people who do circuit bending will go to places that offer, like thrift stores.
Yeah.
Where you'll find a lot of old toys.
Yeah.
And they'll go through and find, and you can get that stuff for cheap at the thrift stores. They'll go to yard sales, stuff like that. And a lot of cases they'll be, you know, not, either not functioning quite right, or, you know, people will give it to you for a couple bucks.
Yeah.
And it's easy for them to, they'll get several of them. And in fact, I've seen the Speak and Spell is one of the most popular, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least the ones I've seen most frequently mentioned. And, they will either, you know, they'll short circuit something or will, short circuit a couple boards together.
Yeah, they rewire
stuff. They rewire stuff.
So it actually involves physically rewiring electronics. So there's often like a soldering iron is one of the basic tools in the toolkit for someone who wants to do this. It was kind of a trend that was, well, at least the whole circuit bender trend is attributed to a fellow named Paul Norris,
mm-hmm.
who found he actually used a Speak and Spell. And apparently, according to the information I read from circuitbenders.co.uk, it was quote, a chance accident with an old Speak and Spell machine and a soldering iron. So I just, hey, you got a soldering iron on my Speak and Spell. Hey, you got Speak and Spell on my solder. Say. there's this interesting music that can be created from these electronics. And in fact, the Circuit Benders website has a few different tracks that you can listen to. Again, these two different approaches, it's trying to achieve that similar outcome using these electronics that were, that had sound incorporated in them from the beginning, but in order to make music, you're actually making it do something it wasn't intended to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, They Might Be Giants did a re-recording of their incredible cover, Istanbul.
Yes.
Which is in fact a cover. They Might Be Giants made that famous back, in their Flood album. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was a fantastic cover. One of their most popular songs when they play live. I've seen They Might Be Giants play live many, many times. I'm a huge fan. Well, they did they covered it again. They did a new version of it where it mm-hmm. was more of an electronica version.
Yeah.
And they use a Speak and Spell in that version. If you listen to it, you can hear the different noises. It's really creative, a fantastic version. And, I'm sure I'll link to that. I've already linked to the video once on the Tech Stuff Facebook page, but I won't hesitate to do it again because I love the band that much.
Well, they're kind of funny too in a way because if you know anything about the band, they started out as just the two of them, John and John.
Yeah, John and John.
Right.
And then they added some Dans.
Yes, they did. A whole band of Dans.
Yeah, and then eventually one of the Dans left and Marty came on.
But when they first started, they used a lot of electronic instruments and loops and things. And then they, if you will, sort of went unplugged. They started using more guitars and live drums or acoustic drums rather than digital electronic drums.
Right.
And, you know, stuff. And that was sort of a shock for those of us who were, you know, fans before that.
Used to it when it was just the two guys up on stage, and then suddenly there were three other guys up there.
Yeah. But if you follow them, you've known over the last few years they've started experimenting with little gadgets and gizmos and stuff and throwing things in.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to watch.
They also did a cover of Chumbawamba's Tub Thumping.
Yes, they did.
For the AV Club. And that is phenomenal. What a wonderful, wonderful video. But they use devices like that as well. You know, they create some electronic music live in a big group of people who mm-hmm. are all shouting the lyrics along, and a joyous video. Absolutely love it.
Were we
Yeah, we can move on.
Moving on. Sort of a hybrid instrument sort of came to me mm-hmm. when I was looking at the guitar. Before even when Jonathan showed me that, he actually showed me before we had this idea.
Yeah.
For the podcast.
I was just like, look at this thing.
And I was sort of fooling around with it, and I ran into an instrument created by a reasonably famous hacker, Jerry Ellsworth.
Uh-huh.
She's very popular in the hacking community, and she's also part of Valve Software.
Oh, yeah,
which
yeah.
Gaming community knows very well. Cetrix has done stuff with other machines, not just the Atari. He's used an Amiga and Game Boy, but he's also used the Commodore 64. And as an interesting tie-in, Jerry Ellsworth used a Commodore 64 to make a bass guitar. But unlike what Cetrix did, she actually used the neck and strings from the bass and uses the Commodore 64 to interpret the strings.
Wow.
You know, basically used it as the pickup for the bass.
Now, as most of you know, Chris and I do our research separately. So this is all new to me, and my mind has just been blown.
Yeah. Now, if you don't know anything about how an electric guitar works, and a bass is a, you know, electric bass is a bass guitar.
Yep.
They use the strings of a guitar, but you know, if you've ever been around one that's not plugged in, the sounds it makes are pretty quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mechanics of the strings are pretty much the same as you'd see in an acoustic guitar, but what an electric guitar uses along the body are those little, sometimes they're silver, sometimes they're darker. You'll see those little things that run exactly, or not always exactly, but perpendicular to the way the strings move. So they are on the body of the guitar. Sometimes there'll be one, sometimes there'll be two or three. Sometimes I've seen, I have friends who are musicians who hack their own guitars and will change out. These are called pickups. And
yeah.
What these do is they basically interpret the sounds of, they turn the acoustic vibrations into,
signals.
That's
a different
word.
Symbols? I did say symbols. A little percussive memory there. Go
that's
ahead.
All right. so yeah, they turn them into, electric signals, which travel along the cable and into, really now, they could be plugged directly into a computer.
Yeah.
But you know, traditionally they're plugged into an amplifier.
Right.
And that's how you can manipulate the signals. Well, Jerry Ellsworth has, employed the use of a Commodore 64, has done some hacking on the device itself to allow her to use the Commodore 64 effectively as the pickup for this electric bass. And, that means she can use this to play, you know, basically any bass guitarist could pick this device up and play a song on it, you know, in the traditional fashion,
uh-huh.
and have it turn out as an 8-bit sound. She can use the device to play 8-bit sounds or something a little bit closer to the traditional electric bass sound. Some of the keys function as a keytar, you know, which is that... depending on how you look at it, really cool or really cheesy.
Cool.
That's how I see it. Where it was the body of the device was a keyboard, but there is a neck where you can manipulate the sounds. And this is what we're talking about there is a professionally engineered, manufactured device where it is supposed to do all those things. She sort of made her own bass guitar hacked keytar device, and it's just very, very cool. There are videos online. It's probably too much to do a clip of, but I would certainly encourage you to check out the videos of her playing this instrument, because there's really a lot that she did to make this work. Of course, then again, she's known for building race car chassis when she was in her teens and 20s, so you figure she's probably pretty good at this.
So I kind of hate her.
Yeah. In a nice way.
Actually, it's more envy than hate.
Yeah.
Let's say I envy her ingenuity and skill.
Oh, absolutely.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
And I wanted to talk a bit about, there's actually a contest that I, or a competition that
yes.
I did not even know about until we started recording this. And my ignorance is something I'm kicking myself over because
ignorance, not so much bliss.
In 2009, there was the first Guthman musical instrument competition.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this was a competition for designers to create musical instruments using technology in interesting ways. And they would submit them to this competition, and the winner of the competition would win a certain amount of money. That first year, it was a $10,000 for all of the different prizes, and first place would take $5,000 of that.
Mm-hmm.
So
$10,000.
So 2009 was when they first had it, and you know where it's located?
Down the street.
Down the frickin' street. Over in Georgia Tech. So Georgia
we're
Tech.
We're in Atlanta.
We're in Atlanta. We are in Buckhead in Atlanta, which is, so when we say down the street, it's actually a little further than just down the street. It's not like a block or two away, but it's easily accessible.
Almost literally though.
Yeah. It's like two train stops and we're next to a train station.
Yes.
So anyway, it's really, really accessible from where we are. And we have never been. We didn't even know it existed until today. And the fact that this exists is now something that tells me I have to attend next year if I can, if I've got that day free. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the devices that were submitted that first year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the nice thing is that we can actually play a little bit of the music that these devices generated. We'll have some clips as well. So the first one, the one that actually won the prize in 2009, was the Silent Drum, which was from an inventor named Jamie Oliver, but not the Naked Chef. Not that Jamie Oliver.
Right.
Different, you know, Jamie Oliver.
I have to say, though, that the name of the instrument sort of reminds me of a title of a Mystery Science Theater 3000 video.
Oh, yeah? Silent Drum?
The Silent Drum.
Yeah. Well, it makes me think of what all people who live with a drummer wishes the drummer would own.
As a drummer? Yes.
Yeah, okay, so Silent Drum is, well, they on the site they actually talk about it being a kind of like using shadow puppetry to create music. It's this really cool thing. All right, so you've got this device where you've got light that is projected from the bottom of the device up to the top. The top has a membrane across it that acts as what would be the drum head, but you're not striking it like a drum. Instead, you're pressing down on the membrane. You're creating a shadow. There's also a camera that detects where that shadow is. The camera sends signals to this processor that has specialized software on it built by Oliver that interprets the shadow as a command to create a certain kind of sound. So depending on where in the membrane you touch, that's going to determine the sound that comes out. And how deep you go changes the quality of the sound. Whether or not it's going to be a loud one versus a quiet one. And you can create this weird, weird soundscape this way. And we can actually play a little bit of that. So here is a short clip of Oliver demonstrating the Silent Drum. And if you get a chance to look at the YouTube video, I highly recommend it because he adds a lot of theatricality to his performance. So here we go. That was what took home first prize that year. And there were many other submissions that you can look at. And I picked out a couple of others to talk about, some that we can listen to. Not all of them. We don't have video or audio clips of all of them, but I can play some of the stuff. One of them is called the Guitar Bot, which took second place that year. It was developed by Eric Singer. And it performs guitar parts for the League of Electronic Musical Urban Robots. It's a robotic guitarist. And he actually used four separate robots that each had a single string. All right, so imagine, think about like the four guitar necks side by side, but there's only one string on each one. And then instead of there being frets all the way down the neck of the guitar, there's only one fret, but the fret can move up and down the length of the string. So it changes the pitch of the note that string produces because the fret itself relocates to make the string the right length to create the pitch you want. And then at the base of each string, there's a little circular drum that has on it four picks mounted to the drum. So when the drum turns, the pick picks the string, and you can turn the wheel a very specific number of times to do the equivalent of finger picking, really, or you could turn it really quickly so that it's just playing faster than any human being, with the possible exception of certain members of Van Halen, could ever accomplish. And so it's really interesting to watch this work as well, because you actually see the frets going up and down those strings to generate the tunes that you hear from it. And here is a short sample of the Guitar Bot. Thank you.
actually sort of reminds me, if you've looked at it, video company named Animusic. Have you ever seen those?
No, I have not.
They used to be advertised on TV a lot. Basically, they do 3D videos of music, and it's all MIDI type. You know, it's all CGI, but the music is, when you look at the video, it's created by these fantastic instruments, things that are essentially robotic in character, and they're playing these all sorts of otherworldly, you know, they're playing themselves basically. And watching that just reminded me of one of the instruments in there, or actually probably several of the instruments. So
yeah,
just kind of cool.
Yeah, there are so many that were submitted that year that I thought were really interesting to the submitted to the competition. Another one was third place went to David Wessel, who was a Berkeley University professor.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy who knows what he's doing. And he had an instrument that he introduced called the Slabs. So, you know, a lot of laptops have touchpads, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What he did was he took a bunch of those touchpads, more than 30 as I recall, mm-hmm. and made an array of touchpads. And each touchpad was capable of producing certain tones based upon where your finger was on that touchpad and how much pressure you were putting on the touchpad.
Interesting.
And all of that information was fed through a device that was running the Max/MSP audio program.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be able to create music by moving his fingers along these different touchpads and could create a pretty sophisticated range of sounds. I mean, there were essentially 96 channels for this device. So lots of options. And here's a little sample of the professor playing along on Slabs. Pretty cool.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah, if you want something, if you want something that sounds a little more primitive, here's another. This will be our final little sound clip.
Okay.
Here's one that I wanted to talk about. A guy named Neil Feathers created an instrument called Vibro Wheels.
Wow.
Yeah. So he creates the sound by rotating these discs that have within it some vibrating pellets. So the vibrating pellets are making this certain noise. And then by rotating it, you're creating this kind of Doppler effect.
Mm-hmm.
And by rotating it at different speeds, you can actually alter the pitch. And then there are batteries that are supplying the power. And to create the music, you run it at different speeds. They're going past guitar pickups, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's ended up interpreting these vibrations and turning it into electric signals, which then can go to an amplifier, which then can send an amplified signal to speakers, and then we get to hear them. And I could talk all about the physical abilities of sound, but we've done that in previous podcasts where I'm not going to cover it. But anyway, so moving this around and around, you can make them go in and out of phase, these different rotating discs that have these vibrating pellets and batteries on them. That's what creates the sound. And they say that the inspiration for this instrument came from a motorcycle engine. And I think you're going to understand what they meant when you hear this. And on lead motorcycle, it's... could you imagine? So that was a finalist for that first competition over at Georgia Tech, which has gone on every year since, including, you know, there was one in 2012 as well. So hopefully in 2013, because we're recording this in 2012, hopefully in 2013 I'll be able to attend that one and see these things in person, because I'm finding it really fascinating. There was another one that I don't have a sound clip for, but the idea was just so wild to me.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Stumreich, she created this device that used lasers. So you knew I was going to love it anyway, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But they used lasers that would detect the texture of various fabrics. So we're talking about the thread count or the thickness of that fabric or even wherever the seams are in that fabric. And through the various changes in that, it would send signals that would create music. So you would actually feed fabric through this machine and the output would be music. You could compose a symphony, essentially, an electronic symphony, by weaving fabric. and changing the pattern of the weave.
That's unbelievable.
Okay, so I think we're going to end this podcast right no, here.
One good pun just destroys the whole thing.
Yeah, I want to.
It just comes apart at the seams.
I'm hurting, and I need to seek medical attention. So
danger looms large.
Oh, man. All right, I'm going to sew this up right now, and we're going to finish this podcast.
I think Jonathan's going to spindle me.
That didn't even make sense.
Spindle?
I'm going to, you know.
Not what? Like the kind that goes on the, never mind. Okay.
You know what? After this, I'm going to tell you a yarn that has been in the back of my mind for ages. Sorry, I didn't. That's a totally different thread. Sorry, guys. I don't mean to needle Chris in this way. See, Tube can play at that game, Mr. Paulette.
Nitwit.
Okay, so we're wrapping this up, honestly. The realm of music and hacking is a rich one.
Yes.
There are incredible examples of ingenuity and musicality out there, some of which are higher on the ingenuity part and less on the musicality, but there's some incredible examples of people really putting their minds to new ways to create music, and it blows my mind. As someone who appreciates music but is still very much a novice as far as making music, I find it amazing.
Well, it's one thing to have something like Pro Tools to record analog instruments, or something like Sibelius to write scores on your computer. But it's kind of interesting to see how people are taking other things and making music out of it. I'm thinking along the lines of people like Ben Burt over at Industrial Light and Magic, making sound effects out of found objects and things like that. It's just neat to see people making things make music that you wouldn't ordinarily see. So certainly not to denigrate the actual musical instruments and amazing software and hardware packages that they use, but this is just kind of fun because it's going, hey, I wonder what kind of sound that thing will make if I hit it.
Yeah, which takes me right back to my days in kindergarten.
Yep.
That it wasn't something, it was someone. Anyway, and we all learned those lessons.
Yes, we did.
Let's wrap this up. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, I recommend you get in touch with us and let us know, because if you just shout them out the window, we may not hear you. So send us an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com, or let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle at both those locations is techstuff, HSW, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.